Thanks a lot, Kristen. It's really great to be here. It's really fun being part of such a powerhouse session on soil organic matter dynamics. It's really exciting. So I'm actually talking about soil organic matter, but my focus is not on carbon today. It's going to be on nitrogen. And I want to give kind of a broad sweeping overview of a variety of different work that's ongoing in my lab related to nitrogen and really our efforts to rethink the cycles and provisioning of bioavailable N. And so that's what I'm going to talk about today. But before I jump into this, I really need to acknowledge the fantastic people in my lab that are actually doing this work. I think I have a pointer here. I promise to put this thing down after this slide. I have a long history of misusing pointers. But I want to just point out some of the people working on this lab or on these various projects. Andrea Gilling, a PhD student, you'll see her work today. Amanda Daly, a PhD student, doing a lot of work on nitrogen depolymerization. Andrea is working on nitrogen organomineral interactions. Lauren Breza is also working on nitrogen depolymerization. Tim Bowles is doing some really neat work on root microbe interactions. And Emily Kiker Snowman is probably one of the most talented early career modelers out there. And she's doing carbon and nitrogen modeling within a microbial framework. And anyway, that's the team that I've been so fortunate to work with and help develop these ideas with, because really it's these people that are doing this work. And so what brings about my interest in bioavailable N? It all starts with my longstanding interest in agricultural systems. Soil nitrogen is central to crop productivity, but agricultural soils are loaded with excess nitrogen. There's multiple pathways for nitrogen loss, and there's grand consequences for the environment and human health. And just one example is the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico at the mouth of the Atchafalaya and Mississippi rivers, where nutrient influx has led to eutrophication and deeply affected the fisheries in that area. There's also nitrous oxide and ammonia volatilization, runoff of nitrogen from agricultural systems. We have a big problem with managing nitrogen in agricultural systems. And it's not a simple problem. It really comes down to synchrony. What is the plant's need for nitrogen, and what is the availability of nitrogen in the soil over the course of the year? And we often end up in a situation in agricultural soils where availability of nitrogen exceeds demand. And the reason for that is that is better than the alternative for producers, which is being in the upper part of this region where demand is greater than nitrogen availability. And so we tend to saturate our systems with respect to nitrogen, and nitrogen losses in agricultural systems remain very, very high. But I just want to point out that this problem is complicated. And we look at nitrogen fertilizer applied versus what ends up in the crop. At best, it's typically 50% of the nitrogen that we use ends up in the crop. Oftentimes, it's a lot less. But I want to point out this paper by Gardner and Drinkwater that sheds some light on the complexity of this problem. So this is the total biomass nitrogen from fertilizer in corn, spring grains, and winter grains. And you can see these are very low numbers, ranging from about 30% to 40%, indicating that crops are tapping into other very large sources of nitrogen. So we're adding lots of fertilizer. It's inefficiently taken up, and yet there's cycling internally of nitrogen as well that's providing nitrogen to crops. And so we have this kind of very tricky situation with nitrogen in agricultural systems, where we have the biology, we have the management interacting. And an indication of our relative lack of success thus far in dealing with this complexity is just looking at these coefficients of determination relating different nitrogen indices to yields. And you can see that these are very, very low values. Our measures of nitrogen availability are still very, very incomplete and not terribly effective. And again, I argue it's because of the complexity of the nitrogen cycle in agroecosystems, which is often overlooked. And instead, there's a big focus on fertilizer management, the four R's. And I think many people in this room are probably familiar with this. If we just use the right time, the right rate, the right location, and fertilizer in the right form, that we would be able to much more efficiently manage our nitrogen. But even under idealized scenarios where we're using these various strategies to manage fertilizer nitrogen inputs, we still find very, very high rates of nitrogen loss and inefficient nitrogen uptake. And that is, again, I think, because we've overlooked largely the biological processes and internal cycling of nitrogen in agroecosystems has been discounted. So let's just take a look. This is your typical nitrogen cycle. You could find some version of this in countless books. Microbes are largely ignored here. You have organic matter being magically mineralized to ammonium and then undergoing nitrification. Microbes are ignored. Litter quality and climate are emphasized rather than microbes as the driving factor in nitrogen mineralization. Even the processes of mineralization are lumped together. And one of the things I'm going to argue here today is that mineralization is, in fact, a multi-step process, and those steps may, in fact, not be coupled. And there may even be a spatial disconnect with where they're carried out in soil. The mineral matrix control over nitrogen is largely ignored. We spent a lot of time on phosphorus over several decades, understanding the complexation of phosphorus under different kinds of pH and by different kinds of compounds in soils. We've largely ignored the role that minerals are playing in the cycling and retention and availability of nitrogen. Plants are largely viewed as passive players in this nitrogen cycle. And there's been some focus on taxa-specific processes like nitrification. We know some things about Nitrosomonas and Nitrobacter. Some of the denitrification steps have now almost become a model system in some ways. But some of the more general processes in nitrogen cycling, such as mineralization, have been, again, largely ignored and just black boxed and thrown up as, okay, it doesn't really matter. It's just part of, it's just linked to decomposition, and the microbes don't really matter for that. There's too much niche redundancy. So we have seen some more sophisticated views of bioavailable N. Here's Schimmel and Bennett's classic model. It acknowledges plant potential uptake of amino acids. Those are those monomers, and that microbes are taking up the amino acids and then intracellularly mineralizing and then releasing the excess nitrogen to the soil. But again, it's a very limited model. And then Drinkwater and Snap, in an agricultural context, published a nice model emphasizing plant root SOM interactions and their potential to lead to nitrogen uptake, and that this could be a mechanism that through breeding we could be exploiting going forward. Again, highly generalized and focused on a narrow part. Manzoni et al. In 2009 developed a very detailed theoretical model of carbon and nitrogen mineralization with microbial physiology incorporated it into it, and lots of good stuff in this model. Clearly, they were thinking very, very deeply about the process of nitrogen mineralization and general availability, but it does not apply particularly well to the field. It does not have a mineral component. It's very hard to extend a model like this to understanding field-based processes. Moshammer et al. In 2014 incorporated stoichiometry and nitrogen use efficiency into nitrogen mineralization dynamics, recognizing that CUE, carbon use efficiency, and NUE, nitrogen use efficiency, are inextricably linked and influence nitrogen mineralization rates. So we're seeing these steps forward. But what I want to do today is talk about how we've been thinking in my lab about nitrogen bioavailability and cycling, and kind of bring together a lot of different components that are driving bioavailable N in soils. So what does a microbe-centric view on bioavailable N look like? Well, this is kind of the model that we've been working on now. So we have proteolysis being released and producing nitrogen polymers. through various decomposition processes. But unlike the Schimmel and Bennett model, we now have those polymers finding their way into another sink besides the microbes, which is the mineral interface. And if anyone saw Andrea Gilling's talk yesterday, and I'm going to give you a very brief overview of that, we believe that the mineral component of soils are a massive sink for nitrogen, and it's actually where a lot of the bioavailable N is being accessed by plants and microbes. And then ultimately, as that those amino acids cycle on and off the mineral interface, they find their way into a microbial community, and depending on microbial physiological traits, carbon use efficiency, growth rates, things like that, you actually finally end up with your mineralized nitrogen. And then there's a final step in this process, which is that plant-microbe interaction is an important mechanism in nutrient uptake. And so microbes are intimately involved in all of these different steps, which together create a very different view of nitrogen availability than what we typically see in most conceptual and quantitative models. And so I want to emphasize here this depolymerization proteolysis step, amino acid mineral interactions, ultimately the final mineralization, and then plant nutrient uptake. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but we're working on protein depolymerization in my lab using a new GCMS method that was developed by Vonick and Richter that actually allows us to measure gross rates of nitrogen depolymerization in the lab, and looking at the uptake and or the immobilization and mineralization of all the different amino acids in soils. And so using this, basically, it's a pool dilution technique, much like what you'd use for nitrate and ammonium pool dilution, but instead we're using a GCMS and labeling the amino acid pool in soils. And what we are seeing with this technique is very large differences in depolymerization rates between, say, conventional and organic sites at the Kellogg Biological Station, and this is work by my student Andrea Gilling, and those depolymerization rates are very closely associated in this multivariate space with microbial properties, microbial biomass nitrogen, microbial biomass carbon, and different kinds of enzymes in these systems. And so we're seeing very different rates of depolymerization across systems. My guess is that these ultimately link back to characteristics of the microbial community that we haven't yet defined. And so once we move from depolymerization, we then get into this really fascinating dynamic with the amino acid mineral associated organic matter interactions. And I don't want to repeat Andrea Gilling's talk from yesterday, but the argument here is that the mineral associated pool is a massive pool of organic matter. It's often 90% or more of the total nitrogen in soils. It can be a pool as large as 3,000 or so kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. Just think about that in a mass balance in terms of what fertilizer application rates typically are, and you can see that this is a very, very large pool of nitrogen. It's also a pool of nitrogen that has multiple characteristics that suggest to us that it should be more available than particulate organic matter pools. It's made up of rich proteins, amino acids. It has a very low C to N ratio. In the lab, we often see that it's associated with nitrogen mineralization, whereas the POM fraction or particulate pools, where we typically think or historically have thought our nitrogen originates, is associated with immobilization. And so, again, this is some really nice work that Andrea has done that's now in review. The basic argument here is that not all MAOM is covalently bonded to a mineral surface. Different minerals interact with nitrogen-bearing compounds in very different ways, and only a small fraction of that is very, very stable. Much of the nitrogen is probably weakly associated with the mineral surface through weaker hydrogen bonds and general electrostatic interactions. And then as you layer out from the mineral interface through various hydrophobic interactions. And so, of course, it depends on the type of colloid that you're talking about and the chemical structure of the particular compounds. But I think we need to get a better handle on the fast-cycling pools that are associated with minerals. I think there's a lot of evidence that these do exist, and we believe it's where plants are getting a substantial amount of their nitrogen through basic priming processes. So plants can stimulate the microbial community, and those enzymes that are produced in the revved-up community helps to access those pools of nitrogen that are out from the mineral surface some. There can also be an abiotic release of compounds from the mineral interface from the production by plants of things like oxalic acid. And so with this in mind, we've rewritten this new version of, we've provided a new version of Schimmel and Bennett, and I would just like to point out that Josh Schimmel is a part of this work and acknowledged when we first contacted him that his work was largely done with peat soils in mind, that he was working in Alaska and developed these ideas, and that he had been uncomfortable with its application in mineral soils until ever since it came out. And so working as a team and led by Andrea, we've put together a new version of this model where the mineral-associated organic matter pool is a very strong sink, and the amino acids are all cycling through there before they find their way to a microbe. So then we finally get down to where maybe a microbe is getting a chance to encounter an amino acid. So what's happening there? How does this nitrogen become inorganic, and do the microbial communities matter? And so we would argue that they absolutely are, and I don't want to go too in-depth into that, because I just want to point out on the bottom graph that I do think that we can get a decoupling to some degree of the processes of depolymerization and mineralization. I think they may be spatially segregated in the soil. They're driven by very different processes as well, even if broadly they're connected by energetic constraints. But I want to just talk briefly about the role then of microbial physiology in rates of nitrogen mineralization. Okay, so let's take an example. On the left, we have carbon with carbon use efficiency. On the left, we have carbon use efficiency that's low, and on the right, it's high. Where carbon use efficiency is low, and just to point this out, I'm right now over here. So low carbon use efficiency, we might expect a higher rate of nitrogen mineralization and a higher CO2 flux in these soils. In this situation where carbon utilization efficiency is high, more carbon will be assimilated, and to meet their stoichiometric demands, more nitrogen will be retained, and nitrogen mineralization is likely to go down in this situation. But of course, there's really interesting dynamics and trade-offs between microbial growth efficiencies and microbial growth rates. And so it's not hard to imagine a situation where carbon utilization efficiencies are low enough that the overall microbial population is small and just not cranking through a lot of material, which could have a negative feedback on those nitrogen mineralization rates. And so in this example, we have a lower growth rate than over here, and thus a much smaller microbial community, and the overall mineralization rates are lower here just because it's a smaller community and a less active community. And I'd just like to point out that I think that there's a lot of interesting dynamics that may be going on with regards to these trade-offs, potential trade-offs between carbon use efficiency, microbial use efficiency, and how these ultimately play out to influence carbon use efficiency, nitrogen use efficiency, and ultimately nitrogen mineralization. There's been a lot of focus on carbon use efficiency. I see people in this room that I know are working in this area, but I would like to see more effort to extend that work now to understand nitrogen mineralization dynamics. And I just want to point out one example of how CUE and NUE can play out to influence nitrogen mineralization rates and the storage of nitrogen in the soil. So this is an example for using the microbial mineral carbon stabilization model, which Cynthia Kallenbach and I developed with Will Weeder. It has litter, it has microbes, it has SOM. Well, Emily Kiker-Snowman has come in and she has introduced nitrogen into this model. It's one of the first microbial-based model with an explicit representation of microbes that incorporates nitrogen into it. And so this has allowed us to examine what are the effects does changing CUE have on nitrogen pools and fluxes. And so I just want to show what the dynamic is, at least the way MIMICS is presenting it. So reducing CUE reduced microbial activity in litter decomposition, resulting in an accumulation of nitrogen poor litter. So this is again an example where the litter is accumulating because the reduced CUE reduced the population size and you're just not seeing as active of a microbial community because of this lower CUE, and this results in a slower decomposition rate and in particular an accumulation of nitrogen poor litter. But I want to now get specifically into what's happening in the soil nitrogen responses to changing CUE. Overall, we see a decline in the mass of nitrogen in the soil. This decline is interestingly largely driven by a reduction in the stable or mineral-associated nitrogen pool because there's just less turnover of microbial N going into that pool. So we're seeing a reduction here in this pool, but interestingly, if we look at leaching, it increases. So there's increases in inorganic N and leaching in this system. And so this is just one theoretical scenario where we've played around with carbon use efficiency and nitrogen use efficiency, and you can see that there's some pretty potentially dramatic feedbacks to nitrogen mineralization and often leaching. And finally, I'd just like to point out kind of the fourth step in this process. I'm putting this back down. which is the plant-microbe interaction and looking and addressing it is a very important driver of nutrient availability and uptake. And this is not something I'm going to go terribly in-depth into at all. I'd just like to point out that there are people in this room that are really attempting to push the frontier in this area using some very creative methods. Tim Bowles, my former postdoc, is one who's now at Berkeley, and Cynthia Kallenbach, a prior graduate student of mine, is also doing some neat postdoctoral work looking at these plant-microbe interactions as mechanisms of nutrient mobilization and uptake. And I just want to then summarize again a very different view here of nitrogen availability that much more explicitly incorporates microbial processes in physiology and also recognizes the importance of the mineral interface. And I think if we can move forward with some of the basic ideas that are outlined here, hopefully down the road we'll have a much better understanding of the processes by which plants are accessing and actually making available nitrogen. And I think given climate change and the incredible dependency of nitrogen on availability on water, that this is particularly important to be thinking about right now. And finally, I'd just like to again thank these amazing people, Andrea Gilling and Emily, Kiker-Snowman, Tim Bowles, Andrea Gilling, Lauren Breza, all contributing great work to this project. Thanks.
And what led to that decision in the model? Well, I think to emphasize that one of the purposes of the paper is to emphasize the ways in which plants and microbes are actually accessing this pool that we previously thought was unavailable. And so I would say, because we're trying to emphasize that, we have things going through that mineral-associated pool. I'm sure you could absolutely draw a line that's bypassing that. I'm not going to argue that every nitrogen-bearing organic compound is cycling through the pool. Absolutely.
Any other questions? Yeah.
I'm wondering if you've measured which amino acids are the ones that are diffusing through the soil, and whether it matters which one is being, I guess, taken up.
We are just, it's a new method, and we're just starting. Hope to tell you something about that in a few years. It's up and running. We're using it, but we don't have that kind of body of work.
Before we take our last question, I'd like people to move up if they can, just to open up the doorways and make room so people can move in and out more easily. There's a ton of open seats in the front. I know it's kind of not the best place to be, but it would make it easier for people to get about if they sort of all consolidated. Is there one more question for Stuart before we move on?
About the speciation of the microbes. Have you done that and see isolate any particular microbe that is not going to be responsible for certain tasks?
No, we have not done that yet. But that's certainly something that we can do.
Great. If there's no other questions, let's thank Stuart again.